The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is brought to you by OneClick Upsell, the most popular, largest upsell app in the Shopify marketplace, trusted by over 11,000 users, over 1,900 of those big spending Shopify Plus stores, and they've generated over $200 million in revenue for the merchants that use them. And you may be thinking, oh, hey, Andrew, I've heard of OneClick Upsell. I know these guys, but do you really? Do you know what they've rolled out recently? They've got some cool new stuff. For their pre-purchase and their post-purchase upsells, you can now select from multiple different offers to present your customers. So instead of having them just have to pick from one single thing, you can give them the option to pick from multiple upsells, which helps and has proven to increase the number of people who actually take you up on those upsells. So if you're not using upsells in your store, it's an amazingly easy, fast way to increase your average order value and your revenues. So check them out at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is brought to you by Fulfill.io. Imagine for a minute that you had a central business brain that looked at every facet of your e-commerce operation, shipping, ordering inventory, accounting, everything to help you make better decisions. Not just about growing your top line revenue, but about being profitable. If that sounds compelling, you should check out Fulfill.io. They're the only cloud ERP designed to help you efficiently and most importantly, profitably scale your 8 or 9 figure brand. They do that through better forecasting, smart supply chain planning, identifying operational bottlenecks that you can go in and solve to open up the full potential of your business, and also a really powerful and incredible warehouse management system for reduced misships and mispicks for better customer experience. And they're the highest rated ERP among e-commerce fuel members, not NetSuite, not Skubana, not Odoo, but Fulfill. So if you're interested in growing, but growing profitably, you'll definitely want to check them out. And you can do that at ecommercefuel.com/Fulfill. Hey everyone, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brand owners build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And if you think about kind of the landscape of content and discourse about e-commerce out there, there's a lot of talk about paid advertisement and LTV and how do you hiring agencies, a lot of tactical things. And I think that's been good to some degree, but if I'm brutally honest, that's not the thing that resonates the most with me about business, about e-commerce. And one person and one brand that I think has done a really great job over the years of talking about things in a way that is not, you know, there aren't a million people talking about this, myself included. I'm very guilty about rehashing a lot of those things I just, you know, threw under the bus. But someone who's done a really great job of taking a different approach to this, looking at e-commerce and commerce in general and more of a cultural framework, talking about branding. Branding is something I deeply want to start investing more time understanding and studying and talking about. And I feel has been ahead of the curve is Philip Jackson. He's the co-founder of futurecommerce.com, where they really study and look at and promote and try to dissect that intersection of culture and commerce. He has a podcast, they have a newsletter, research reports, events, and they just do a lot of really interesting things. And so I had a great chance to catch up with him a couple of weeks ago and wanted to have him back on for something a little bit more formal, but really excited to dive into all of that, including a big report they have coming out that talks about some really interesting ways commerce is going to be changing in the future with some of the political and cultural and technological changes that we have. So anyway, all that said, Philip, welcome, sir. And great. I mean, I love the work that you're doing in the space, man. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. If you're just listening on the audio feed, I'm like hand to heart. This is such a huge moment because I have so much respect for you and the community you've built. I have been in e-commerce for almost 20 years, and it's rare that you come across people that only say great things behind people's back. And you're one of those people. It's such a pleasure and honor to be here. Thank you.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that. Well, before we dive in to, because we're going to spend a lot of time talking about the visions report that you spent an unholy amount of time and energy and love pouring into. But I want to, before we do, you kind of have this different take on business and commerce that I think is really interesting. So if you would talk a little bit about that, like what is it that, how do you approach it differently? I kind of teed up a little bit of it in the intro, but why, how do you look at that world differently? And like maybe, a little, you know, almost as importantly, what is it that has shaped you into doing that? Like why, what in your past or background or in your worldview has made you kind of look at the commerce world differently than probably your average DTC person on Twitter?
we could spend probably the whole of this time just talking about that. I think that when you're looking at what differentiates a successful brand or a generational brand or what you might call a cultural brand from another, is their awareness and insight of what is happening in the world and where they belong in it and what their voice or tone or tenor is when speaking to that element of culture. And the question we get over and over, when you call yourself future commerce, inevitably someone's going to ask you, what is the future of commerce, Philip? And I didn't have a it's a fair question. I didn't have a great answer for a number of years because the thing that people want to hear, Andrew, is they want to hear some technology. They want to hear a choice, right? There's a choice of a technology, a channel, an emergent marketing campaign. There's something that they want to hear that's a tactical output, a place where they can put investment. But I think that there is an abstract answer to this that if we all understood, we would be better for. And the reason I sort of shy away from tactics is I spent 20 years helping e-commerce companies and e-commerce brands to deploy tactical advice, right? So, but the thing they failed at over and over is they aligned the wrong tactic to the wrong strategy because they had a lack of vision. And what I see is the greatest answer to what is the future of commerce. The future of commerce is whatever a culture decides that it should be. And in which case, you have to recognize that in that statement, that every culture and every subculture is different to another. And that means that things that culturally work in the West, things that work in the US and Canada, are not necessarily transplantable. They're not playbooks that are able to be run in other cultures, wrote word for word. You have to adapt things for the culture in which it inhabits. So typically I've taken a hard line on things like, well, what is the future of commerce? Well, it's obviously live streaming because it works in Asia, but we have a very different culture to what has happened in Asia, especially in China over the last 30 years. You have people learning how to be consumers for the first time. I've grown up and you've grown up in a consumer-centric society. We've been amassed and awash for the whole of our lives and how to consume. So our approach to commerce is different and fundamentally going to look different to another culture. I could go deeper, but generally, the best brands in the world do this, and they do this really well, and they employ hordes of people and teams just to understand and gather cultural insights to synthesize them and then put that into action of what does that mean for our brand? If you're Adidas, you're Nike, right, you're Walmart, if you're Amazon, you understand where the culture is going because you're thinking about it constantly. They have people to think about it constantly. What if 7- and 8-figure brands could do that too? And that's what Future Commerce helps you to do. We are your cultural insights and foresight team that you would never otherwise build.
Yeah. And we talked again a little bit about this last time, but we're both in e-commerce. We're both in commerce. We both at some level or at a lot of levels helping people sell more stuff, right? And I think both you and I, even being in that space, both you and I would be able to look each other right in the face and say, people don't need more stuff. Like, people have way too much junk, you know, probably myself included. How do you think about, how do you reconcile those two things? I think about that sometimes. Sometimes you think, through, like, man, is this really helping people, you know, that much what I'm doing? And I have a few answers for that. Maybe I'm deceiving myself. But how do you think about that? Because I know we talked about that before.
I think that this is an existential question that we all have to face right now. I was just listening to a podcast about one thing that all cultures have in common. So there is a new movie that's just come out that is 1 hour and 40 minutes long, has no dialogue. And the movie centers entirely on what humans do with waste. What do we do with waste? Do you know what is one monoculture and one cultural artifact that every single society has in common is we don't want to see our waste. There's a human aversion to seeing the product of our wastefulness and our consumption. In Finland, they'll box it up and, you know, they ship it off and they, you know, they stack these boxes like they're Lego. Everyone has a different way of packaging and hiding their waste. In the Atacama Desert right now, there is a fashion graveyard that is growing so large you can see it from space. And while we all have to contend with the fact that we all believe we need more stuff or we have the desire to continue to consume, I do think that it is by human nature to consume. And it is one of the things that are driving the trends that are present in our report right now, is this nature to consume. So I have this background that we've talked about before, where I'm a deeply spiritual person. And I help other people to discover their spirituality as well in a pastoral role. And I've been a pastor at a local church for about 12 years as a part-time minister, just helping people in my local community to get more in touch with their spirituality, in particular, you know, their relationship with Jesus. But what everybody's expression of that deep desire and this nature that they feel like they have to get in touch with something larger than themselves, we all have something in common there. So what I see is that nature inside of me and helping someone discover something requires you to develop some level of discipline, because you're never going to grow in your faith if you don't have some discipline over the things that are preventing you from having that deeper level of growth. You're never going to wrangle in your consumption, and we're never going to solve some of the problems in this world around sustainability, climate change, if we don't wrangle in some of the worst of us and our human nature. We have to put some of our human nature to bed. So we do wrestle with some of these things. I don't think head on, though, because very few people, I've learned professionally now, part-time, no one likes to be preached at. So, you know, one of those things is, how can we come to a shared understanding of the challenges that we face, both in business and in our personal lives? How do those things intersect with each other? How do we have a conversation around that? And how do we do that with people that, you know, yes, fundamentally are selling things in the world that, you know, some customers didn't even know they wanted until they saw the ad, right? But I don't know if that answers your question. I think it's a tough question to answer.
Yeah, it's tough, and I kind of lobbed it at you. Kind of a little bit.
Feel free to edit it out.
No. I think like for me, I think through one thing that gives me a lot of hope for the future of e-commerce and being in this industry, when I really sat down and I thought about it, was I'm pretty confident about two things. One, I'm confident people are still going to buy stuff in 10, 20, 50, 1,000 years. And two, they're likely going to be buying more of that online than they are in person as a general trend over time. And when you buy something that is a great product that is beautifully made or is just solves a problem for you or helps your life or brings a great tradition into your life or helps you bond, like there are really fantastic products that genuinely help people and the world. And there's alternatively probably 5 to 10 times as many bad ones, but there are great products that really improve people's lives. And so I think that's a cool part of, if you can help more of those people really, you know, get out into the world and succeed, I think that's cool.
This is one of the core beliefs. So we have, you know, we have a mission statement at Future Commerce. One of our core beliefs is commerce touches everybody. It doesn't matter who you are in this world. You have to engage in commerce, from the greatest to the least of these, right? We have to engage in the buying and selling of goods, or the needs, values, and services exchange that requires us to take place, to inhabit physical space in the world. Whether you have little or you have much, you have to engage in commerce. That is a unifying factor that we can all agree on. And therefore, I think that commerce entrepreneurship is one of the greatest, powerful, most incredible ways to instigate change in the world, because creating new ways of engaging with people that have to engage in commerce, and doing so with a mindset from the get-go that you have a purpose and a place in this world, and you're trying to will something into being, I think it's a very powerful force for change. And if we can inspire those people, I think we can have a real impact on the way that society interacts with each other. If we have to engage in commerce and we can change commerce, maybe we can change, if we can change the culture in commerce is how we say it, then maybe we can change the culture through commerce. And that's, you know, a good perspective for us as we're, you know, creating content, as we're performing research, and as we're holding these events, is that the people in the room that we serve, that we're inspiring, are the ones who are actually doing the work. Hopefully we're helping them to do that work with a little bit better foresight.
Yeah. I want to talk about your visions report. So every year you put out a big report kind of looking at, and again, less tactical. I do a big report as well. I don't think nearly as well or as beautifully as you do it. It's more focused on tactics and demographic trends and things like that, and measurable things. I'm a number finance guy, right? So those are easier for me to look at. But yours focuses more on like you kind of alluded to, where the culture is going, you know, shifts in behavior, really high level cultural and economic trends that are going to have a bigger impact, but maybe longer to play out. And so the one this year that's coming out very soon is called Visions Volume 4. And it's, I believe you mentioned it's kind of for heads of product or owners of brands to understand how the future is going to really impact how their brand is going to resonate or not with, you know, their customers. And so there's a lot of things that you talked about at a high level. Some of the themes, we're going to dive into most of these. The reemergence of old media was something you're discovering. A lack of a kind of lack of a counterculture. The canonization of commerce and the emergence of niche critics. Treating people as machines and then nostalgia for a less complex world. And I want to start with the reemergence of old media. Talk a little bit about that, if you would. And I've got a couple of follow-ups, but I'll let you tee it up or take it from there. But what are you seeing with the reemergence of old media and how that's impacting marketing and branding and how people connect with brands?
Well, let's start with the, you know, these are all what we've described as sort of loops, and they're sort of sympathetically influencing each other. So one of these trends has a huge impact on another. When you see this reemergence of physical media, we're sitting at a moment right now where a number of things are happening in our world. The first is that there are capital incentives for the big media corporations that we all, you know, depend on for entertainment to begin to, through after a decade of competition with each other, to begin to pare back their catalogs. And if you lurk on physical media subreddits, for instance, like DVD collection, like our DVD collection or RVHS, you'll see that there is a growing worry and concern that some of the things that we love that are cultural touchstones, and I keep using this word culture, it's so important to understand that there are things that we can all agree on that exist in the world right now in this moment because we have all lived in the same moment in time and space. You've probably seen The Little Mermaid, right? We can all sing a little bit of Part of Your World, but my children's world is very different to my world is. My world, we had a shared context. My children's world, there is no such thing as a shared context. The things in the media that they interact with, like YouTube Shorts and TikTok, are fundamentally different from between the two, my two girls, to everyone else that they know in their school. They are cultivating and gardening their algorithm all the time, and they struggle to share context. So the reemergence of physical media, why are cassette tape sales at a 20-year high? Why are vinyl records making a comeback? Why is Taylor Swift reissuing her catalog on physical media? Why are DVD sales beginning to spike back? And why are resale marketplaces that power all of these things having year over year record profits? It's because there is a lack of physical permanence in our world, and we are physical beings. One of the things we say in the report is that anything less is body betrayal. We spend so much of our lives tapped into the matrix. We're on Spotify for music. We're on YouTube for entertainment, Netflix for, you know, long form media viewing, and we're second screening through all of it. We're so immersed in the ephemeral digital media. Physical media grounds us. And so we're answering a question of, well, we know why, but it's bigger than just that. There is also a deep sense of nostalgia that is powering this that everyone is feeling from, you know, Gen Z and Gen Alpha onward. And so this renaissance and this nostalgia for physical media is also powering brand trends and design trends that harken back to the eras in which those pieces of media were created. So you're seeing lo-fi audio has record scratches and dust and crackle. You're seeing video channels that, you know, have the aesthetic of VHS tapes. These things help us to understand not just that the trend exists, but why the trend exists. And if we could think about those two things in tandem, maybe we can forecast where the next trend is going.
I had no idea that things like DVDs, vinyl is always kind of a cool audiophile hipster kind of vibe. I would have guessed that's always been popular, but DVDs, cassettes, things like that. Like really surprised me that those are kind of making a comeback. And you think about too, not exactly sure how old you are, but we're roughly ballpark plus or minus same, you know, similar generations. And think about, you know, I grew up watching a lot of PBS because my parents would kind of were hawks at the TV, but like, you know, Reading Rainbow, 3-2-1 Contact, those kind of things. If you haven't seen them, I'm guessing you've probably heard about them. But yeah, today, if you're 14 or 15, you've got this hyper personalized list of things that you may or may not be sharing with your friends. I never even thought about that. Talk a little bit, if you would, about, so you have one of the many things that you do at Future Commerce. You have something called Archetypes, which is among other things. It's a print publication that comes out, I'm guessing a couple times a year, I'm not sure, but it's
annual. Yeah.
Annual. Okay.
Yeah.
Covering a lot of the things that you're talking about here, you know, commerce, culture, but in a beautiful print, large size medium. And I feel like, I mean, I've had someone that run Mike from Mountain Gazette. He's an e-commerce field member. He's been launching like a huge, like not a magazine, but like a plus size magazine in print. It comes out twice a year. I'll find myself sitting down with that and reading it for extended periods. Even thought about doing something like that for e-commerce fuel. Talk a little bit about like what made you do, you know, because again, that's a re-emergence of kind of an older media form. Talk about your experience with that and why you're investing in that and the reaction to it.
The real desire to want to publish the writings and some of our perspectives into print is the same thing that fuels the anxiety around Station 11 disappearing from Netflix and you can only buy it on DVD. It's that when it disappears from your inbox and the email that we sent you, you know, is no longer worthy of being queued when you're trying to reach, you know, inbox zero, whatever it was that we wrote down is gone forever in your mind. And what we are trying to do is our conversations and the things we write about are so, I feel like they're durable because they're examining aspects of human behavior. Now, they are rooted in the moment and we're tying them to things in the moment, but we're examining human behavior. And so I think they're worthy of living on longer than what the time frame that you have to check it out in your email amongst all of the other newsletters you'll get on, you know, Sunday or Monday morning would give you. So the desire there was just to put it into something physical that would allow you to unplug a little bit while you're trying to engage with more long form content. And, you know, these pieces are usually 2,500, 3,000 words. It takes a lot of time to research and write a piece of that nature. Also, we started to realize that print by nature has an aesthetic, right? There's an aesthetic that comes along with print. It anchors you in a design choice that evokes an emotion, makes you feel something. I don't believe that digital media, especially written digital media, has the same impact. There's something about sitting down with a book, in our case, a large format magazine. It's 240 pages and it weighs 2 pounds. I wish it weighed less than 2 pounds. It would be cheaper to mail. But it is a prolific piece that is beautiful. We paid for embossing. Like it is, we have vellum paper in there. It's like, it's worthy of living on a coffee table for years and reminding you that there's something deeper in there that you just haven't seen yet. And it is full of interviews and insights of people from our industry who we would consider to be archetypes of success to some degree, right? We sit down with Drew Rue last year in September after she sold Hero Cosmetics to Church & Dwight for $640 million. She told us the whole story from top to bottom. And she is an archetype. Her brand is called Hero Cosmetics. She is our hero archetype. We're going to learn more about what both the hero archetype is and how she sees herself being a hero to her customers and how her customers are heroes in their own lives in turn. So I think this concept of brand archetypes and the Jungian brand archetypes, you know, jester, hero, lover, ruler, caregiver, innocent, the sage, the magician, these are things that are commonly understood and they're a clever device for us to be able to have a deeper conversation about what it means to deliver e-commerce or retail experiences in the world.
Hey, it's Andrew here with a quick aside. If you're listening to this episode and enjoying it, then I've got to tell you about our private community for 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brands. The secret sauce, as the name implies, is that everyone inside, we vet everyone to make sure they have real-world experience running an e-commerce brand and struggle with the same kind of things that you do if that's the position you're in. And why is that important? Well, it means you get fast, on-point answers to your most important questions. So if you've got somebody that HR issue and you're worried about letting someone go, but you're worried about a lawsuit or you're trying to figure out the best ERP to implement or maybe you're trying to understand marketing techniques, you can post a message to our form and get answers within hours, sometimes minutes, from experts who know this stuff. You get to plug into an amazing network of e-commerce entrepreneurs worldwide across the United States and the globe that you can connect with when you're traveling for meetups and get invites to member-only events like ECF Live. And then finally, You can avoid costly hiring and software mistakes by tapping into our review directory of over 10,000 reviews for agencies and e-commerce software tools. I mean, it's really hard to find unbiased reviews online right now. So often they're either paid for or they're affiliate links. All of our reviews are completely unbiased. So when you go down the road of hiring a new ad agency or looking for that new, you know, ERP software, you have a lot more confidence that you're not going to be wasting the next 3 or 4 months of your life on an expensive project. So if that sounds interesting to you, come join us. You can learn more and apply ecommercefuel.com, and we'd love to have you inside. All right, let's get back to the discussion.
Interesting. And I wonder if it's not just print, because I think you're right. I think print to some degree has a, especially when done well, has a very distinct characteristic. But I wonder if it's also just about competition and what you're used to, right? Like 20 years ago, people didn't spend most of their life online. Now they spend most of their life on time. 20 years ago, you could buy a magazine that didn't have ads 3 out of the 4 pages. Now, if you go into, you know, a newsstand, you get an ad. Even a magazine you're paying $5-6 for is probably going to be at least 40% ads, right? So yeah, I mean, I find myself, I've got just on my coffee table, like you said, I've got stuff that I put there, love, because it's done really well, and I'll grab it. And it's just, it takes so much, it's much easier to be able to come and take up a lot of my mind space and me to focus on it. Talk a little bit about, if you would, about the canonization of commerce and the emergence of niche critics. That was kind of like one of the big takeaways, but break that down a little. What does that mean? That's a mouthful.
It is a mouthful. Well, this is one of the trends in the Sears Visions report, and it actually links right back to that print aesthetic as well. So we do have a piece of print, a new book coming out called The Multiplayer Brand. And The Multiplayer Brand does focus on this idea that a class of critics have emerged in the e-commerce set. Now, I told you earlier that I've been doing this for 20 years. I am probably the chief critic among us. I have been doing this for 20 years, and I have a hot take about everything. I don't necessarily publish at all these days, but there is a class of short-form content creators, specifically people on TikTok or YouTube Shorts, who have made their whole persona in analyzing consumer brands, analyzing consumer brand campaigns, in brand aesthetics, logo design, UI and UX choices, even so far as Lighthouse scores, right, and web performance. And they use this as an element of critique to draw some sort of conclusion around the quality, right, or the belovedness of a brand. And this is an interesting thing in the world in that it's not one or two people, it's not 20 people, it is hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people, to the point that there is a commercial opportunity to take this new area of criticism and to try to make a living off of it. A few people that are both going to be at our summit are featured in both our report and in this print piece, The Multiplayer Brand. A TikToker named Ashwin Krishnaswamy, who does this with remarkable detail and an incredible amount of output, just does incredible, thoughtful teardowns and critique of brands. There's Neil Steven, who is a retail analyst who goes into Macy's and takes pictures of disheveled shelves and, you know, posts them on Twitter for us to sort of gawk at about, oh, how far these beautiful, mighty retail establishments have fallen. These sort of critics of commerce are effectively communicating to us that there is a way of doing things. There is not just a way that works, but maybe there's a right way. And in their minds, if they did it their way, that they're, you know, the brands would be better off for it. And if consumers were aware of the better way, that they would make better choices around the products they purchase and be able to spot brands that aren't doing a good job and save themselves some pain and some money in the process. That is a canon. That is a canonization of a book that becomes a sacred text on which we build a best practice. I have been critiqued in the past myself for calling Baymard into question. It's like a Baymard Institute becomes an institution that, you know, disperses religious right knowledge.
Can I interrupt you to ask Baymard Institute for people who aren't familiar with that? Can you describe what the Baymard Institute is?
Yeah, so it is they call themselves an institution. It's an organization that proliferates a phenomenal amount of user research, user experience research, and user interface design to promote best practices, equitable design experiences, and generally the better way to find paths both to conversion and to reducing customer friction. They produce a phenomenal amount of content. They have both continuing education courses, paid courses, cohort-based studies, paid research, and also a bunch of free content as well. And I would say that the e-commerce ecosystem as a whole is better for Baymart existing and other institutions like it. But generally, what happens is that an institution like Baymart is only supporting the businesses that exist in the present. If you're a future commerce, you don't use best practices to build the future. New best practices emerge by people who break the current best practices to build new ones. And that is the real conversation here at the core of what is a canonization of e-commerce. Can we really say that commerce has become sort of canon in that there is a set of texts that we all agree upon as being sort of gospel, and divergence from that therefore is some sort of heretical deed that's worthy of critique by people on the internet? And it's prolific. There's a lot of this happening in the world, so much so that we're putting out a whole piece of research about it.
Man. What about another one you mentioned is nostalgia for a less complex world and tangible shared experiences. And maybe dovetailing a little bit into we touched on it a little bit with DVDs and kind of emergence of old media and kind of print, but it goes beyond that. So yeah, what are some of the things you found beyond the things we've already covered for that? Because I think that resonates with a lot of people.
Yeah, there is what we've generally found through some of our research and through advisory panel work. And by the way, a lot of this was covered that we'll be releasing in long form video at a symposium that we held at the Museum of Modern Art back in April of 2023. And we had 12 leaders from outside of commerce, very specifically outside of commerce, to come and help inform us as to some of these trends. And nostalgia came up over and over again. Nostalgia and its cousin, something called anamoya. Anamoya is a sort of a pet term that's emerged in the last 10 years or so that describes having nostalgia for a time you never lived in. But
what is the term? Sorry, anamoya?
Anamoya. And they say that they say that Gen Z feels anamoya more deeply than any generation before it. What we draw a conclusion to is that this feeling of nostalgia, whether it's for a time you lived in, like a simpler time or a time before, or this anamoya, which is a feeling for a nostalgia for a time you never did inhabit, might be coming from the fact that we believe that there is an acceleration of consumption. There is more to consume now than has ever existed in the world. Not just physical products, but digital media as well. In fact, this can be evidenced by a number of things, including a Microsoft accessibility survey that showed that the average attention span is decreasing every 3 to 5 years, right? The average TikTok gets, you know, a 2-second view. And so as we're seeing attention spans and digital immersion grow, we're also seeing a rise in nostalgic content. There's a trend on TikTok called Core, which prominently features, you know, Mr. Rogers and some of the shows that you mentioned before, Reading Rainbow, things that have an aesthetic from a simpler time, people that spoke to you in less excited and bombastic tone, people that were really level-headed in their reasoning and their communication. It stands in stark contrast. It's an antidote. It's like a salve for the moment that we live in right now. It feels very different. And I think that what we're evidencing in the report is that this longing comes out in a bunch of different ways, but it's being seen mostly through additional consumption. It's consumption of old media and its revival of old trends in order to continue to fuel consumption in the present.
I've thought about this more recently. I can't remember if I've talked about it on the show before, but attention spans are dramatically decreasing, right? I mean, across the board, I think for everyone, not just younger generations, but everybody. But to build businesses, to do the kind of research and in-depth content and proprietary studies that you do, like those, you have to have a long attention span, right? Like you just have to. It is table stakes for building meaningful things to be able to focus on something for long extended periods of time and to be able to stick through them and suffer and watch it emerge on the back end. That's the story of almost every business I've ever seen. So I wonder, in some senses, like technology is moving faster, And, you know, anyone listening to this that's in e-commerce, acquisition's gotten harder. The game has changed. We just did a big SEO strategy with my team and Jeff Oxford, which will, I think, return to a podcast as well. And you know, I used to fancy myself a pretty decent SEO, build all of my businesses off the backs of organic traffic. And you know, my skills there have greatly atrophied, as I was, you know, reminded of with that session. So there's a lot of hard things, but I also wonder, like, if you are not plugged into TikTok 3 hours a day and you're able to actually be able to keep that muscle of long-term concentration, it seems like that's going to be a huge competitive advantage for building, you know, entrepreneurship, for just life in general. And granted, I say this with the full knowledge that every generation, once they hit about 40, which is where I'm at, it's a time-honored, you know, rite of passage to poop all over the generation that comes before it and some of the cultural things of the day, right? So
the
I realize
kids these days, yeah.
Totally, right? Yeah. So you can see the wrinkles on my face just like start to, you know, become even more apparent. But I do wonder, like, I don't know if you thought about that, but that seems, I don't know how that's not going to be the case.
It's interesting. My again, you know, my greatest focus group are my 11 and 12-year-olds who are so curious about the world that I used to live in, right? It's not the world we live in now. They want to check the mail. They want to, you know, they want to go to the newsstand in the grocery store. It's novel for them. It's, to me, it's commonplace, but that's not quite the world they live in, right? So this idea of physical permanence, I think also harkens back to this, you know, one of these first trends we talked about. It is fueling everything. It also is fueling a new interest in reviving and like a revival of subcultures, right? So at this moment, you know, we can have every subculture that has ever existed all coexist, which is not how the world worked when you and I were young. When I was younger, I was part of a scene. I was part of a hardcore metal scene that had a wardrobe, right? We like to be part of the in group. You sort of had to look a certain way and you dressed a certain way and you listened to a certain type of music.
And you said you were going to give us some of those photos for the show notes, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, okay. You know it.
At least half a dozen of them. So check them out. It'll be some good viewing.
I could dig one up probably of me playing a hardcore show at some point when I was like 16. But you don't have to wait for that, you know, that physical manifestation anymore. I think that we are trying to remanifest it in many ways. And again, if we had to just get to the why and dig just a bit deeper, I think it's because we just don't have much in common anymore because everybody is so isolated and so individualized. How can we find more people like us? We have to remanifest monocultures. Brands are capable of doing that. This is where we make it concrete. Is that only a brand at this moment in time can give us all something that we can agree on, like the blue sky. Is that this brand exists in the world, it takes up space and it's beloved. And I know other people who have the same feeling about that brand. It can attract people, it can create communities. These can be real differentiators. And in a world that where people are becoming, you know, less spiritualized and they're looking for more places and ways to intersect and congregate and find more like-minded people, brands create yet another way to do that. So why not in the future a multiplayer brand where people can have and play a part in what that brand really means? This is community-driven, taken to the max. And that is where the ultimate, you know, outcome of this year's Visions Report winds up, is that we live in a participatory culture where people don't just want to consume, maybe now they want to participate. And where does all this consumption lead? Maybe to feeling like you're left out, maybe to feeling a little bit like you don't, like there's a, you're tired, you're left empty at the end of it. What if we could participate? And that is the big so what at the end of this, is how do brands become more participatory? How do you have more discourse with your customer? How do you take more insights from them and allow them to co-labor and build with you in creating this thing that you're building with blood, sweat, and tears? Maybe you can shoulder some of that burden with your customers and your community.
How do brands get, their companies rather, get better at branding? And that was a huge open-ended topic. But I think about, like, one of the things that is on my list for this year for e-commerce fuel is to level up the branding that we have in like, and there's like probably dozens and dozens of you know, facets of that, right? Because really a brand is every touch point and interaction and a promise that you make, and you can splice that up into, I could name 30 things I'd love to improve across the e-commerce fuel brand. But if you had to start thinking through a couple of things, maybe a couple of foundational elements of that, or skills, or just competencies. Anything that you'd throw out there to people, like for me, for example, I'll just selfishly ask, as someone who's trying to elevate our brand this year, what were those areas you'd really try to focus on, or skill sets you'd try to develop?
Well, this can be like the X factor, is that I think some have it and some don't. And I think that the real challenge,
Andrew, you just don't got it. Sorry.
but maybe one person in the org doesn't, but another one could. And I think that's where there is a real conflation between the aesthetics of a logo, fonts, design effectively, and a brand. Mm-hmm. Right. I've heard it said that brand is the one sentence your customer says about you behind your back. If you were to ask me, I would say, well, maybe the e-commerce fuel logo could always use some revision. But the one sentence that people say about you behind your back is so unbelievably consistent from person to person. I opened this whole thing telling you your brand has been tried and it is true. And people associate you with being helping them to grow and creating a community that helps foster growth and deeper connections. You have a brand. I think everything else is always subject to change based on the time and what's trendy and what's fashionable at the moment. So let me give you even a better example of this, is that I think that real brands take time. We're in such a hurry. We're in an unbelievable hurry. If you want to have a brand that endures, you have to endure. And so you just have to keep surviving. That is really, at the end of it, a brand? A brand? It's something that just was able to persist despite all odds. And maybe that logo changes over time. We'll become nostalgic about the logo when we see a long storied track record of having persisted despite the odds. So for me, building a brand is like, can you really manufacture that? Or can you just build a sustainable organization that just keeps persisting no matter what? That is building a brand. Now, whether that has share of voice with a customer or not, I think that just takes time. And we have learned through the last 15 years of near zero interest rates that capital motives and incentives can try to accelerate that and fail. You can create a recognizable logo. You can create a brand that a name of a product that is synonymous with a certain category. But have you created a brand? No, because you've not endured. So just continue to try to persist. That is my perspective. It's not going to help you design a logo, right? Sorry. and sorry, I have very strong feelings about that concept in particular. I will say that there are matters of taste, and what is acceptable or pleasing to one group of people may not be for another. And I think you kind of have to find that through trial and error over time. And you get good at it when you have sampled a lot of things. But generally, if you look at a logo from 30 years ago, you'll say, yeah, it's out of date, right? Things change and evolve over time. So maybe you should be changing and evolving more often. Maybe your brand refresh needs to happen every 2 years. And you need to be constantly looking at e-commerce fuel and tweaking and nipping and tucking on a really regimented schedule, rather than making a big, push, over a longer period of time.
Yeah. No, those are fascinating thoughts. And thanks for the vote of confidence, Phil. Appreciate it. A few things to check out. We're kind of running a little bit short on time here, but if you enjoyed this, you're going to absolutely enjoy the podcast that Philip hosts. Future Commerce Podcast. You can get that anywhere you listen to podcasts, on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, or at the website, the futurecommerce.com website. The report, Mayor, it's when is the report being published? We're recording this in June of 2023. It's coming out this month, right?
Yeah, June 15th.
Fantastic. Coming out June 15th. There's also an event on the, I think, to help celebrate and kind of launch that out there. And is that an invite only, or can people buy tickets to it? How does that work?
There may be a ticket or two available. Go to futurecommerce.com/summit. We have incredible speakers. We have the Matt Klein, the head of Global Foresight for Reddit, Jose Cabaco, who is the head of storytelling from Adidas. We have one of our podcast co-hosts, Orchid Bertelsen, will be there with us, as well as a philosopher, a man named Ruby Tillow, and Ashwin, who I mentioned earlier, Krishnaswamy, and a whole host of other people that I just don't have time to mention here. One thing I'm extremely geeked about is that all of the visuals for this show and some really special things I can't give away just yet, we really lean toward the immersive, are being created by the creative director and visual artist behind Lizzo Maxwell and the Smashing Pumpkins, a woman who's an incredible artist named Linda Strawberry. So very excited about how hard we go on things like this. Would hope to see you there June 15th in Chicago.
Sounds like an amazing event. And again, that's futurecommerce.com/summit. And then we mentioned the Archetypes Journal. If you'd like to pick up a copy of that, again, 250 beautifully done pages of original content around branding and commerce in an oversized format. That's archetypesjournal.com.
Plural, yeah.
Which one? Plural, Archetypes Journal. And then for everything else, report included, and just checking out all the research and the newsletter that they have as well, futurecommerce.com. Philip, it's amazing what you're doing, man.
Thank you.
I'm excited to see. I mean, just you're such a wide swath of stuff that you're covering, and in a very cool way. Like I mentioned at the top, this is not Me Too content. This is stuff that not a lot of people are doing, and is very, very important stuff. So well done. And I'd love to, if you're up for it, before we officially sign off, do a quick lightning round to send us off into the sunset of your game.
Let's go.
All right, cool. How would you describe the e-commerce environment in 1 to 3 words right now?
To be determined.
To be. What's one of your favorite brand? One of your favorite brands. We won't make you choose your favorite child, but a brand that you really admire and with what they've done.
Tracksmith speaks to me on a spiritual level as a runner. What Matt has built at Tracksmith, I think, comes genuinely from the heart. I think they can do no wrong. Tracksmith is my answer.
Nice. One of the fondest memories from your childhood?
My mom was a baker, and I grew up working in commerce. I would say one of my fondest memories is, you know, running the cash register for her at, you know, 10, 11 years old, and feeling like I was actually helping her to grow a business and helping her in, you know, realizing a dream. What a privilege, you know?
And I believe you live in Florida, is that right?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, live in Florida. If you weren't living in Florida, where would you live?
You know, I've really come to fall in love with New York City. It has a magnetic draw. There will be a point in my life where I do spend more time in the city, and I have, you know, worked there for years and years and years. So I have enough of New York, but I'd love to actually live there and be immersed at some point in my life. But for now, South Florida is wonderful.
Hardest part of your business?
You know, hardest part right now is not becoming apathetic and continuing to push the envelope. We are probably creative and ambitious to a fault, and we are a small team of 8 people. But I see us more as artists speaking to a group of people who have so much power in this world that it is worthy of the effort. And it would be super easy to just fall back on the things that get clicks. It's the 5 tricks to make your landing page convert higher. But I think in the end, we're better for continuing to hold ourselves to a higher standard every year. And so far, we've done that for 4 years running. I'm really proud of it.
And the most squirm-worthy question, at least for you, for the whole podcast, probably, how much money is enough? Ask everybody. And you can answer this either 1 or 2 ways. You can either say, I have X amount of money in like liquid net worth, could be cash, could be stocks, but liquid net worth in the bank or in investments, or I have a X amount of a guaranteed income for life. Someone's just going to cut me a check every year. So if you make more in the future, that's nice. That's great. You can, but if you didn't, you know, somebody told you at the end, you know, right after that, hey, you can't work anymore. If this is all the money you get, this is what you need for good life. What would that amount be?
Can I ask you a question before I answer it?
Yeah, of course. Go for it.
Is it a cop out for me to say that I don't think the dollar amount is actually important? I think too much. I think more money actually is it's detrimental.
What do you want me to say? Yeah. A little bit of a cop out, only because if you had zero, like if you didn't have any net worth, right? Like, and you're having to every day go like, you know, scrounge for food and like that would be a rough existence. Yeah. You couldn't like raise kids. You couldn't pursue the work you love. So And I think that's why it's interesting, right? Like, I think you're absolutely right. At some point, the returns diminish greatly. And I think that's why the question's interesting.
Yeah. I think that what is enough, personally, I think that it's a shame that in this world, you have to make $120,000 in order to have a middle-class life. I think $120,000 is the number. I yearn for, you know, to be able to do way more for my kids. But the college 529 savings plan that my kid keeps asking me about is, honey, you need to pray 529 times today that Future Commerce works. That's the 500. That's the 529 plan that we have. And I've made way more than that. And I've made way less than that in my lifetime. But I'll tell you, having a lot less has made me way more. That desperation made me way hungrier and make me want to work way harder and make me want to be way more ambitious. I think you get a little more and you're so comfortable that you get a little bit soft. So I don't know if it's a satisfying answer, but it is my answer.
I like it. 120K. How many hours?
I start something new too. I mean, you know.
Yeah, yeah. That's true. But that magic genie would maybe prevent it from making any money. Hence the question of what's your max amount.
I do think that this also tips the hand that I don't think I've listened to two at the end of too many e-commerce fuel podcasts, or else I'd know what other people said.
Oh, it's so fascinating. We've had I should do a montage sometimes of the answers different people have said.
Because
we've had 500,000 all the way up to a billion, right? Like the whole gamut, you know.
Wow.
So it's really interesting.
Well, did I just prices right it? Like, did I come in with the $1 bid? I feel like I did a little bit.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, it was pretty good. You definitely were on the lower side of the billion mark for sure. So how many hours a week do you work?
Oh, 60 at least.
Number one hobby, and you can't say work.
Oh, I'm a musician. I love playing keyboard, guitar. I love creating music. Yeah.
And then finally, who's one of the most interesting people you've met through kind of the e-commerce ecosystem or landscape? So, you know, you're incredibly well connected, you know, tons of brands and people, but just someone who maybe pops up spur of the moment in your mind, you're like, this, I really deeply respect this person's work or what they've done.
Oh, it's such a shame. It's one person. The first person that came to mind was the former CEO of Trade Coffee, Mike Lachman. I don't think I've ever met anyone who is as well-spoken and has such an incredible recall of history and how the present is informed by the past. A brilliant, brilliant thinker and an amazing operator. Just an amazing person. So it's a shame I can only mention one, but I'll go with Mike.
Yeah. I'm going to go track him down and learn more about him after we hop off here. Philip, thank you, sir. This was so much fun. Again, if you're listening, make sure to check out the Future Commerce podcast, an amazing listen. Their annual report on everything we've talked about here is out June 15th. So this is, you know, if you're hearing this after that, make sure to go check that out. You can do that at futurecommerce.com. If this is before then, and you maybe want to sneak a ticket to one of their event in June, that's futurecommerce.com/summit. And if you want that beautiful, gorgeous book, Archetypes, that talks about, you know, all things branding, commerce, and entrepreneurship, that's archetypesjournal.com. Philip, thank you so much. It's been fantastic getting to know you a little bit better the last month or so. And look forward to the time we can hopefully sit down and do some person. And I can't wait to make it to one of your events in the future. So
thank you, brother.
Looks like you put on an amazing show, and appreciate your work you put out there. You do amazing work.
Thank you. That means a lot.
Given you've made it to the end of the episode, there's a pretty good chance you're fairly serious about this e-commerce stuff, which is why you should check out the e-commerce fuel community. It's a vetted, vibrant community for 7- and 8-figure brand owners. And joining gives you access to a lively discussion forum for experienced founders sharing insights and getting help, access to our library of over 20,000 member reviews on everything from agencies to tech to lawyers to all the things that, you know, founders are making hiring decisions or purchasing decisions on to run their business, and invites to member events throughout the year. So if that sounds interesting, you can apply for membership and learn more at ecommercefuel.com. Big thanks to one-click upsell from Zipify Apps. Rapidly increase your AOV by offering targeted, high-converting upsells. You can get started with them at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. And also to Fulfill.io, an ERP designed specifically to streamline complex e-commerce businesses and the highest-rated ERP among our community members. Learn more at ecommercefuel.com/fulfill. Thanks so much for listening. Work hard, adventure often, and I'm looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.
the ASY Radio Network live from New York.